Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Kent Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So one of the highlights of my year each year is going to Venice Immersive and seeing all the different projects that are there. There's like the most world premieres for big new projects on the immersive storytelling circuit, new location-based entertainment projects, and also just pushing forward of what's even possible with the structures and forms of immersive storytelling. And so super excited to go back. Last year, I did like 30 hours of interviews that I just got published, and I'll be going back again to hopefully see all the projects again and to interview as many of the creators as I can. On today's episode, I feature Liz Rosenthal and Michelle Riak. They're the co-curators of Venice Immersive, and they do an amazing job of selecting a wide range of different types of projects, but also keeping tabs on the different trends that are happening in the industry and really reflecting back to the wider industry to kind of push it forward in terms of what is needed in terms of really exalting the storytelling aspects of virtual and augmented reality, immersive technologies, AI, anything is all coming back to, is it a compelling story that is moving your emotions? And so I always love to hear the different types of stories that are being told, but also to see all the different ways that they're using this interdisciplinary fusion of the different elements. In my previous episode in 1787, I really dig into the philosophy of the elements of experiential design and the context, quality, character, and story. And that in this conversation, we're talking about each of the projects that are there. And so you kind of naturally hear a description of the story and the different things that are highlighted in terms of how they're using the media, the way that they're telling the story, they're using different modalities, embodiment and social dynamics and agency, but also abstractions of architecture, visual storytelling, the cinematic tradition, but also these kind of new emerging social dynamics and all sorts of ways that they're communicating meaning through like semiotics and the process of all the forms of storytelling. So we're covering all the different projects that are being featured here at Venice Immersive. If you are interested in going, August 26th is our last day to secure a pass. That's coming up in a couple of weeks. And yeah, if you are interested at all, then I highly recommend it. It's kind of like the whole industry coming together. And it's a really amazing chance to see some of the best work that's out there, but also to connect to other people that are in the industry that are really interested in these types of ways of using these technologies to tell stories. And also check the show notes to see some of the different projects that are available already in terms of the best stuff selection, but also the VR chat worlds. And so, yeah, I'll try to put links in the show notes so you can go check out some stuff ahead of the festival if you are going to be there or not. If you're not going to be there, there are some projects that you're going to be able to see. And also there's going to be a VR chat curated world that's going to have links and portals to all the selection of all the VR chat worlds that are featured in the VR chat worlds gallery. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Liz and Michelle happened on Friday, August 14th, 2026. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
I'm Liz Rosenthal. I'm the co-curator of Venice Immersive. I'm also an executive producer at work, and I've set up many different programs that have helped develop projects.
And hi, my name is Michel Riak. I'm based in Paris, and I'm co-curator with Liz of Venice Immersive that we started 10 years ago this year, and I'm also a maker. I'm working on my own immersive experiences, and I'm also head of studies for the Biennale College Cinema, College Immersive, and College Blend.
Nice. And maybe you could each give a little bit more context where you're coming from and your journey into the space.
So I started my life in film and independent cinema. I ended up working with one of the first companies that was financing feature film shot with video cameras. And we worked on 13 different feature films and then got very involved in new mediums that would change the way that stories started being interactive. But I set up a company called Power to the Pixel and ran different programs that helped develop and finance projects in a big program called Power to the Pixel, the Cross Media Forum in London, and an incubator program called Pixel Lab. And I also then set up a program called Creative XR in the UK, where we developed and financed 60 immersive projects. So I've been in the kind of innovation story space for a long while, fascinated about how we use these amazing spatial tools to tell embodied stories. But it came from cinema originally, and right at the first moment when available tools started to become ubiquitous for artists to start to be able to iterate and easily develop projects when filmmaking was so exclusive to those who had money.
And I come from dance. I was a dancer first, and then I moved into production, international touring organization for major dance companies, moved then into theater, then into cinema. And in my last incarnation in that field, I was a commissioning editor for Arte. It's a German-French broadcaster specializing in cultural programs between Germany and France, running the film programs and co-producing about 30 different feature films every year. As part of that job, I became more and more interested, starting in 2008, in interactive storytelling. And that little by little started to very seriously fascinate me, to the point where I resigned from my job in 2012 to fully focus independently on producing, writing, creating interactive storytelling experiences. And that has brought me to the Venice Biennale, where I have started by running the College for the Biennale, which is a creative development workshop for cinema with microbudget, and also the College Immersive for immersive experiences. And Liz and I, we started the Venice Immersive Festival as part of the International Film Festival in Venice in 2016 with a pilot edition, and in 2017 with our full-fledged first edition. This is why we're celebrating our 10th anniversary together in that partnership with the Venice Biennale on Venice Immersive this year.
And what was really amazing is Michelle and I started working together maybe in about 2007 in Power to the Pixel. So we've had this wonderful relationship of curating over 11 years actually now.
Yeah.
But before, it started back in 2007, so it's almost 20 years we've been collaborating.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and we're really at this kind of like liminal transition period in the overall industry where things are ending, new things are beginning. But it's also the 10th edition there at Venice Immersive, where it sounds like that you're getting as many submissions as you ever have in terms of like a real thriving immersive storytelling, location-based entertainment. There seems to be growing business opportunities for a lot of these pieces that are actually being shown to the public and having wildly profitable results. And so I see Venice as kind of like the beginning of the year of sorts of like the new projects that come out that then will be going out to the rest of the festival circuit. So just love to hear a little bit of reflection on this moment and also celebrating the 10th edition here of Venice Immersive.
You know, it's interesting because you know better than anyone how much the media in general reflect the state of where an art form like immersive is standing at any given point. And VR and immersive has gone through ups and downs and is constantly being evaluated on where it stands, whether it's happening or not happening. And we have to say that if we base our judgment just on the quantity, but also on the incredible quality and diversity of what we see for our selection for Venice Immersive, VR and immersive in general is far from being done with. It's unbelievable how creative the field is. And it's almost as if the less interest from the general media about immersive right now, because everyone's focused on AI, is actually a very, very good thing, because it helps focus on the content and the people who are involved and the people who make content, who create work. They do it for the good reasons, which are for the sake of the stories that are told, for the emotions that they're seeking to trigger in us. It's all for the right reasons and not for media, you know, fluff.
And so I think when we look at our selection this year, it's such a broad range of different types of studios and artists. And we still have that experimental side where we have artists making incredible work in small teams, undiscovered artists that we haven't shown before. But at the same time, we have these very robust experiences. You mentioned how location-based entertainment has really grown and thrived. We've got some amazing examples of those projects that are set to distribute in venues across the world, and all kinds of experiences that involve really A-list talent. So you can see that it's thriving in all directions. So we've got the sort of experimental artists still, you know, showing these extraordinary works. And we've got things that are more robust and maybe mainstream that are going to go out to audiences and are really proving that there is a model for this kind of work.
And for this reason, when we were thinking with Liz on how to celebrate the 10-year anniversary, it became immediately very, very clear that we were not interested in looking at the past and reminiscing, you know, whatever happened during these 10 years, because so much is ahead of us that we decided we're going to entirely focus on the next 10 years and celebrate what is about to happen. One of the signs of this is the incredible shift towards smart glasses and devices that are incredibly new that we will be premiering at Venice Immersive this year, where you can now wear regular glasses and have a full immersive experience in 360 degrees with incredible quality of definition, color, contrast. And we feel like we're starting the next chapter of immersive.
Yeah, I had a chance to try out X-Reel's Aura glasses at Augmented World Expo. And so, yeah, it seems like this kind of glasses form factor. And then it's also running on Android XR. And so you start to have like a proper operating system and glasses that are a form factor that I think could really take off in a sense that is comfortable to wear, but also has display glasses or even fully sixed off experiences within VR. So I'm really excited to see what artists are being able to do. And that the fact that they're going to be premiering some of those experiences here at Venice Immersive. Very curious to see that. So maybe we'll start there with talking about some of these XR glasses that are going to be premiering. Maybe you could talk about a couple of the projects that are going to be showing there at Venice Immersive that are using these new X-Reel Aura glasses.
And one of the projects we're really excited about showing is Nevatars, that is directed by Andy Serkis and stars Daisy Ridley and Kathleen Turner. And it's really an extraordinary project because the quality of the animation and spatial design is exceptional. I don't think anybody was quite prepared to see work like this developed on these devices. I think everyone was concentrated on the, you know, the ubiquitous sort of communication use of devices, and they weren't expecting that we would have something that was so high quality. So it's a really fun animated piece that 3DAR are involved in. So Herman Hiller's company from Argentina, really fantastic team that they've put together, but produced by Imaginarium. And the second project that we're going to be showing on the XR glasses is Galapagos by Atlantic Productions, who are based in the UK, who made these extraordinary nature documentaries that were often voiced by David Attenborough. And this is a series of four episodes that takes you to Galapagos. And as well as having absolutely sumptuous documentary footage, you also have spatial environments that you interact with. So again, a really powerful use of the glasses. And that project is voiced by Margot Robbie.
Nice. Yeah, I saw that Google was involved with that, with Atlantic Productions, which of course has been doing all sorts of stuff on Apple Vision Pro, all really high-end production. So very curious to see how they're working with the glasses. And I think it's also probably worth mentioning the location-based entertainment type of experiences. It seems like there's going to be some really premier innovations when it comes to both interactivity, exploring history. But yeah, I'd love to hear about some of the ready for LBE type of experiences that have either already started to show with like Enter VR or other types of projects that you're excited about in terms of the LBE space.
Yeah, the location-based entertainment is really where the market is happening right now. And as it is establishing itself, it creates a sort of a side effect where we feel that there's a danger that all works look and feel a little bit the same with, you know, a guide. You're taken through a different landscape or different settings, and it does feel sometimes a bit formulaic. So we have been looking for experiences that are designed for such spaces that can accommodate hundreds of viewers at the same time, but trying to see if there are new directions. And we're really happy to see that, yes, this is happening. And there are different experiences that we're showing like that. One of them is Everest, which is the first climb of the Everest seen from the point of view of the Sherpas. And it's a documentary fictionalized in the sense that it restages in the way the teams and the climbers that conquered the Everest for the first time. The quality of the rendering is remarkable, but what we loved about it was the quality of the storytelling, that it didn't feel any longer with that formulaic way of in process of taking the spectator by the hand and being very pedagogical in a way. There's a poetry, there's an epic dimension that is conveyed through the piece, which we love.
And then the project Amsterdam 1652 that's produced by Enter VR, who've just set up their new venues in Amsterdam, is an absolutely spectacular project set in Amsterdam in 1652, where you roam through the city and you come across all kinds of characters and people from the time. And it's so incredible. It's so sumptuous environment. I don't think we've ever seen anything of such quality. And what I'd say also about these two experiences is the fact that you are also interacting with elements in the scene and interacting with characters, and you're embodied as well as a character or an avatar, which is quite rare, because a lot of the time, you know, Michelle was mentioning about sometimes the formulaic quality of projects where you're kind of a point cloud entity, but you kind of feel much more embodied in the scene and you're much more present in the scene in these free roam experiences. So that's really exciting for us to see. And then there's a third experience, Starstruck, the Smithsonian experience, which has already launched in London and in Washington, which is a spectacular journey into space where you get to experience the universe through these super telescopes, and it takes you on a journey through what you see through these different telescopes. So another beautiful experience that is destined to tour around the world.
Then in terms of communal experiences, one that is atypical is the one around David Bowie. It's an experience that is produced and presented by Elle Acoustics. Elle Acoustics is this incredible company that makes the most sophisticated sound systems for concerts all over the world, in places like Coachella and the biggest stars in music using their system. This time they've set up an incredible experience that mixes a very sophisticated soundscape and sound story around David Bowie, and mixed with the work of the photographer who was a close friend of David Bowie and followed him absolutely everywhere and captured the most intimate pictures of David Bowie, you know, in it off stage, on stage, but also off stage. And it's an opportunity to discover a side of David Bowie that we've never seen, because all of these pictures have never, ever been published or seen anywhere. And it really unfolds an emotional and psychological landscape of the more private David Bowie. And you just witness the legend that he was from the most intimate side. And it's a very, very moving and very beautiful experience. Anyone who loves David Bowie as a figure, as a modern hero, and as an artist, I think will be considerably moved by this experience.
Yeah, that's listed as an immersive installation. And so you are listing different types of formats, whether it's virtual reality, mixed reality. Sometimes there's installation, but sometimes there's no explicit like VR, AR, XR. There's more of like an immersive quality, and having like a sound installation. It's really exciting to see spatial audio. But also Venice always has this mix of projects that are kind of in a little booth, and then others that need a much larger footprint to be able to have an installation. And those are always exciting to see how they're using that space, either to have lots of people at the same time or for have an individual walk through a large space. And I had a chance to see a preview of the InterVR piece at United XR, just to be able to see how you were just being able to walk around a space, and that it's a bazaar and that there's other people walking around. It gets away from that kind of guided tour, like you're on rails and you don't have any ability to kind of wander. So it's doing these things where it's combining that wandering with this agency, but also like having a story that you actually embodied as a character, interacting with the characters, learning about the world. So really excited to see the latest iteration of that. But in terms of the other projects that either have an installation, other immersive installations, love to hear about some of those other projects that have a little bit larger footprint that are using that space to either have social dynamics or allow people to really move around a space.
Yeah, another very interesting format is Empire at Sea, which is by Peter Flaherty. And he describes it as solarpunk AR drama about a group of climate scientists who move to a remote oil rig to attempt to create a sustainable city at sea. But huge earthquake and tsunami happen and they are stranded and survive and live in this sort of climate laboratory. And it's Apple Vision Pro headsets, and you are walking around the story around this giant table that has this very intricate LED light system that comes from above, and the drama is happening around in mixed reality, and you wander around the table. It's incredibly precisely captured volumetrically. It's extraordinary. It's a really, really well-told drama, but the format is super interesting. And it's going to be for up to 10 people. So it looks very dramatic in a dark space. You have this sort of very striking vision of this lit up podium that you wander around and the drama happens. So you can look at different elements of the scene by wandering around the table.
And Kent, when you were talking about different types of group experiences, we need to mention Shifting Connection, which is an experience from Taiwan for 8 participants. And the 8 participants, you realize very quickly, you see each other in an abstract representation, and you start realizing that the whole piece is about becoming a part of a dynamic sculpture, a moving sculpture that becomes more and more abstract, but entirely fed by your responses to each other, by your movements, and by a sort of synchronicity of movement in space and intentional moves. And that is an incredible experience where not only the participants are absolutely active and make the experience move forward, but you become the very material of the experience. Your body and the abstract representation of your body becomes, with the others combined, the element of a structure that takes shape with you and in front of you. It's a very interesting participatory approach to being together in immersive.
And it's the same director from Taiwan who did the amazing experience that we had 2 years ago that I have completely forgotten the name of, Michelle. It's terrible.
Not Break Your Head, but... Oh.
Where there's a dancer who's orchestrated in a headset, and it's almost like an orchestra of people in a headset. So it's an amazing spectacle for people outside the headset, but you're also the choreographing the movements of head. So he comes from theatre as
Free
well.
Free your head. And it's really interesting because when you are in the headset, there were about 35 spectators all seated facing this dancer, but facing the audience that was walking by. And in the headset, you were supposed to follow a spot that was moving in different directions. And what you didn't know when you're in the headset is that you were fully choreographed and coordinated with all other participants in the experience. So you were actually a dancer just with your head. Your head was dancing with other people's heads and create a choreography that the people outside the headsets watching you were enjoying. So it's the same research of participatory interactions where the viewer becomes the raw material for the experience.
Nice. Yeah. And maybe we'll talk about some of the other installations. Let's talk about Being in You, which sounds like it's talking about different aspects of you or being guided through like a second person perspective, but also themes around death.
Yeah. The piece is amazing because it's incredibly simple in appearance, but then you start realizing that the person who is speaking to you and sharing her experience with you, she's an artist from Poland who actually died and knew that she was dying And she made this piece in order for her to be survived with the people who would see the piece, people who knew her, people who loved her, but also strangers. So the piece is done by an artist who knows she doesn't have much time with us, and she's preparing her own survival for us to be with her once she's gone. And the incredible poetry and the delicate emotions that she moves to make you empathize with her as you understand that she knew she was going to be dead soon. The emotional dimension of this piece with a very minimal effect is truly mind-blowing.
It's really using spatial tools in the most subtle and profound way, because she's almost asking you to inhabit, that she can inhabit you, and you're almost lending your body to her. And they describe it as a duet between the living and the no longer living, which I think is super beautiful. So I'm very interested to see where you put that in your beautiful sharp count of different elements. But I think I can guess that.
Yeah, there's different qualities of presence, the contextual domains and the character themes. And so, yeah, there's like multiple axes. And I'm always excited to kind of dive in to see how people are using the tools of immersive and combining them, like all these different disciplines. I think that's the key character of most of the different pieces at Venice, is that it's not just a film. It's not just one medium. It's a fusion of things together that makes these unique ingredients and experiences. And each of them are using it to tell new and different stories in completely innovative ways that we've never seen before. So it's always exciting to see the stories that are being told, what the contextual domains are doing that, what ingredients and all the elements that they're using, and then also like the overall themes that you experience. And so, yeah, it's always a pleasure to kind of see all the emerging genres and techniques that are coming out of Venice. But yeah, just curious if that reflection makes you think of any other projects that are kind of doing that type of fusion of different forms together.
Well, 36,000 Ways is, but maybe Liz, you can talk about it because this is something you're close to.
Yes, so this is an art out of competition section, and it's by the artist Karen Ben Khalifa, who made one of the first embodied VR pieces, The Enemy. So this is not in a headset, but it's a very powerful and visceral experience. It takes you into the experience of the body and more through a piece of shrapnel. And you walk into the experience, and they're just hanging through invisible threads, pieces of shrapnel that Helen actually picked up in Ukraine on the front and took them back secretly in suitcases, which is quite amazing. So you walk into the installation and you pick up the shrapnel, and it activates your heartbeat and this very short but incredibly powerful voiceover by him about your body and war. And just holding this very jagged piece of metal in your hand is so powerful and so visceral. So it's an art installation, but it's a kind of haptic sound arts installation, totally unique.
Yeah, I had a chance to see it at IFA Doc Lab. It's like a really beautiful embodied spatial poem that really quite powerful as a piece. It's a piece that really stuck with me. So I'm excited to check it out again.
There's if we talk of the participatory dimension, you know, of a group of people in an, once again, totally, totally different style. There's a piece called Octopocalypse, which is a science fiction fantasy. And I don't want to spoil it. So we will not say what it's about, because I think it's worth keeping the surprise. But it's a piece for three viewers at a time. And the three viewers are invited to sit at a console where through screens they can start having an assessment of how to deal with a contact with an alien creature. And this alien creature does not speak our language, and we cannot communicate with them through words. So we need to try and decipher the communication that is being tested. And on that basis, we need to decide whether we should treat them as friends or as foes. And on that basis, make decisions that may kill them or welcome them. And it's an amazing piece that totally embraces the AI dimension of its fabrication. And it's very interesting because it's a piece that is almost embracing the already cliche look of AI. And you can see that it's like second degree. They've done it with a lot of AI, but with tongue in cheek, saying, we know it looks like AI and we intended it to look like AI, which gives it, it's very interesting because already today, that kind of AI look feels obsolete and feels like it's already dated. So the whole piece, it's a piece in black and white, so that also helps. The whole piece feels almost like an archive or something from some years ago while it's done by the latest AI. But it's really, really interesting. The humor in that piece is wonderful. It's a wonderful, funny piece. And it's done by Max Sacker, who did some years ago two of the most powerful horror games that we presented. And this is his latest creation. He's an artist based in Berlin.
And it's also, talking about the design, I love the design, even though I know what you mean, because it takes a sort of style of black and white B-movies, disaster B-movies. So it actually, like Michelle said, it's super tongue-in-cheek, but it's got a brilliant style of its own that I think lifts way beyond the generic we see.
Yeah, no, certainly AI has been a huge focus in the broader XR industry where so many things seem to be pivoting over to AI. Just curious if there's other projects that are featuring AI and if there's also like an influx of things that had AI that was not quite at your threshold in terms of AI slop or not good storytelling or just sort of like a, I don't know, I think the last year you mentioned something that some of the projects were kind of like dehumanizing in terms of like the way that they were using AI. So it's always kind of like a weird threshold where there's all sorts of consolidation of wealth and power. And I have a lot of strong opinions personally around AI. But as curators, there's still artists that are using it to either reflect on the human experience and trying to reflect on the implications of it, but also potentially use it in ways that tell stories in completely new and novel ways. So just curious to hear if there's other projects or just kind of what that process was like for you as you're looking at all these submissions.
We've seen quite a lot of projects that have been submitted to us for our selection that were using AI as a core engine, either for the interactive aspect of it or for the aesthetic dimension of it. But Liz, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we actually have almost no other than Octopocalypse. Am I wrong?
No, totally right. I mean, I'd say Octopocalypse is dependent. You know, the format is dependent on AI in a completely novel way, whereas there's AI in the workflow of probably nearly every project.
Oh, yeah.
It's there in some way, but it's not visible and it's not something that the submission was pushing. So, for example, I think voice interaction is a huge thing. And I think everything we saw was broken and didn't work. And
it or too obvious, too much in your face. Yes.
Yeah, just froze you up the experience. But actually, going back to the experiences for the XR smart glasses, there's going to be a voice interaction incorporated into those experiences because that's a very important part of the smart glasses. So we're interested to see how those have developed since we watched the project. So that's definitely going to be an element of some of those two projects that we talked about, Galapagos and Nevitas, but I don't think there was anything else that
we did see quite a few.
But we didn't select them.
No.
Because, and I would say obviously a huge shift has been the use of splats, of Gaussian splatting. And obviously that AI is incredibly important within the processing of those images. And I don't know if you want me to talk about that now, but there are two projects that stand out. One comes from China, The Pigeon Ring, which is a live action family drama. And it is probably the highest quality, most incredible capture of an environment and characters that we've seen. So that's a very exciting project. It's quite spectacular. And then Noni de la Peña and Rory Mitchell's Out of the Ashes, which is about the LA fires and the different areas that were destroyed and taking you to meet people who were affected and whose homes were destroyed. And it's quite an exceptional project that takes you through the geography and space these places in ways that just wouldn't have been possible without that technology.
Yeah, I know. I've had some chats with Nani over the last couple of years after the fires in Palisades and other places. So yeah, just to hear that type of archival documentation, how that was used for insurance, but also I'm very curious to see how that's woven into this story with Rory Mitchell. So very curious to see that. And I know that Agog is going to be here. They've got another projects that they're supporting. One is the Solwata that I know that they were helping to fund and promote. But also it sounds like Agog is going to be doing a little bit of what they call a petting zoo. So having access to some of these XR Aura glasses for people to kind of try out. So just curious to hear a little bit around Agog and what they're going to be working on here this year at Venice Immersive and the project of Solwata.
So Agog are an important interview partner for us. They're doing quite a lot of different activations in Venice. So you mentioned the petting zoo, fitting with the two projects that we're excited about that are on the XR reel, the Project Aura glasses. They have this petting zoo where they're going to be allowing anyone to come and try out all the different types of smart glasses. I think it's going to be over 5 days. So anyone can turn up and try out the glasses, which is great. It's just going to be at the entrance of the aisle and they've got a big space. And also they're doing a whole round series of workshops on Saturday the 5th that soon you'll be able to book up for. And it's really looking forward at the next 10 years of creativity. So for them, you know, smart glasses are going to be incredibly important for artists, and they want creators to be able to get their hands on them and to be able to get inspired. And it's a very forward-thinking series of workshops they're going to be holding. And also they've got their Project Soulwater, which Gayatri and Felix and their Now Here Media have directed. That is a beautiful documentary piece that's a mixed reality and it's an installation that is voiced by Mark Breffalo that takes you to the Solomon Islands and to experience the first climate refugees who had to move as their island was completely inundated by the rising sea levels.
And they're also funding a very special event that we're going to do on the evening of Saturday, September 5th. It's an experience done by Staye Hanema. You may remember him for his piece, The Smartphone Orchestra, or Ancestors, that I'm sure you've seen. And this piece is a commission, actually, from us and from Agog for the occasion of our 10th anniversary. The piece is called La Laguna Parla, which means the lagoon speaks. And it's going to be a large-scale experience for anyone present on the island at that moment using their phone. And for about 25 minutes, being connected with the Venice Lagoon in many different ways. It's a very, very poetic and participatory experience, just like Staye knows how to do so well. And it's definitely made possible thanks to Agog. So this will be between 7 and 8 on the evening of Saturday and will be followed by a reception, by a fun, you know, music and cocktail moment for everyone on the island right after.
Is that just happening once or is there multiple showings?
Yeah, just once.
Okay.
Just once.
So I guess as people are making their reservations, I think they're going to be coming out like August 27th. They'll be able to start to make their bookings.
Yeah, at 2 p.m. At 2 p.m. Venice time.
So they'll have to not book something over that time to make sure that there's some.
Yes,
some time
we would. We would recommend. But yeah. But anyone present in the garden will be able to participate.
Okay.
And we'd love everyone to come together because it's a very special moment.
Very special.
Yeah, usually in the evenings, there's kind of like a cocktail gathering of folks hanging out. So that's already kind of a place where people are gathering. So I'm excited to see that project and Staye with the Smartphone Orchestra. Always has these unique, novel, emergent social dynamics that are happening mediated through your phone. So I'm very curious to see how he's tapping into what he was able to do with Ancestors and continue to have these discussions and using technology as a portal into our own creative imagination. So very excited to see this piece. I know there's a whole VR Chat World selection. There's a couple of pieces in competition that have had creators in the past that's been a part. So I'm wondering if you could talk about the couple of VR Chat Worlds that are in competition.
So we have a project by Finns, who's shown many of his incredible worlds that he's built. He's come back with a project called Nell Blue, which We're excited he's back. I think, is this his fourth project in competition? I'm trying to remember, Michelle. But
the competition, I think it's the third.
Yeah, so Finn's specializes in these incredibly intricate and beautiful and evocative emotional sort of fantasy worlds about childhood and memory. And this one is going to be a beautiful journey that takes you into the wonder of childhood. And that's all I'm going to say about it, because it's going to be a surprise journey. But we are very excited to have him back. Obviously, Finns is a star world builder in VR chat, and it's not the same without him, without having a Finns project. So we're delighted to have him back in Venice. And the second project is by a world builder who we've only just met, called Jessian, and it's called Back to the Experience. And it's actually a VR chat documentary that takes you through all these different worlds and gets you to sort of experience all the different ways that people have built worlds and all of their different techniques by actually taking you through into the different worlds. So it's a really fantastic way of experiencing what world building is and how it's grown and all of the different techniques. And he takes you to quite a few of the sort of worlds that we've shown in the past and new ones that we're also showing in our best of section this year.
Yeah, Jessian has created the Virtual Museum of Virtual Art, which I think has been featured in the virtual galleries at Part of Venice, and also was a previous winner of Raindance. And so, yeah, a really incredible creator that has created these spatial arts of calligraphy and VR, but the Virtual Museum of Virtual Art. So very curious to see this kind of documentary format. Is it actually people walking around like as a guided tour, you know, because it's VR chat?
Yeah, you're guided from one world to the next. You move through portals from one world and one story to the next.
Cool.
We have two for everything we show in VR chat. Every world hop will be for two or three different worlds, and each group is guided by someone and wrangled by someone else. So there are two people, one in front, one in the back, and making sure no one gets lost and, you know, everyone can enjoy. But it's a wonderful way of actually showing what is worth seeing, or the places, and, you know, taking you directly to where it's worth going in the world, instead of letting you discover by yourself. And we've really refined the technique to make sure people feel comfortable, because one of the problems with VR chat worlds is that some people are extremely comfortable right away, or they're used to going into worlds in VR chat, and they can go fast, they can run, they can jump, they can go, you know, everywhere very easily. But for people who've never been in VR chat, who've never been in worlds there, just moving, walking, or jumping, or handling things, you know, with their hands, can be tricky. So we need to accommodate the different levels of familiarity with the environment. So it took us a couple of years to understand how to make everyone comfortable with those world hops.
But also with Nell Blue and Back to the Experience, they are going to be shown by themselves in a world hop. So they're going to be an hour long, each of those world hops. So because they're in competition, they have a slot their own.
Nice. Yeah, and looking at the different formats, I noticed that there's a couple of pieces that were explicitly called out as being an immersive film. I know with the Apple Vision Pro and the more cinematic tradition, there's been more and more of 180 video. It seems to be a format that has been taking off on Apple Vision Pro. But love to hear any thoughts on both the Disneyland's Wolf, an immersive experience, as well as Desert Palms, are two pieces that are 360 videos or 180 video, more from the cinematic VR tradition.
They're both traditional. One is a documentary. Wolf is a documentary on wild wolves. But the real subject that convinced us with this film is that it's not the wolves. The wolves are the pretext to question the very position of a human trying to film wildlife. And it's decolonizing, in a way, the approach of humans trying to capture the secret life of wild animals. And the whole film is about how these two guys who are making this film are trying to be approved and be embraced by the wolves. And all their process, all their strategy is to just be there, make themselves available, make themselves vulnerable, so that the wolves start coming to them and welcome them. And I think that this is a wonderful reflection on human dominance. And it's a lesson in modesty and humility and in blending with the wilderness. And the way the wolves evolve through the film is captured in little steps all the way until they truly welcome and embrace those humans who have been sharing so much time with them. So that's for the story. But the beauty of having it in the Apple Vision Pro is that the quality, of course, of the image is absolutely remarkable. So the sense of being close to these two guys, but also to these wolves, is quite unique. For the other project, which is Desert Palms, Desert Palms is the winning project of this year, College Immersive. The Biennale College is a creative development workshop where we develop 12 projects every year, 12 immersive projects from all over the world, and we finance one. The winner of this year is Desert Palms. It's a project from the US, and it's really a comedy. It's a one shot by a steady camera that never moves, and you are in the waiting room of an emergency clinic right next to the Coachella Festival. And it's all about getting these people coming in, going out, waiting, not being treated, you know, when they should. And it's a comedy of human traits. It's very funny. It's very unusual. It's a pure 360 video. It's very well performed. And it's really a very funny gaze on, let's say, on American society today, but with a lot of kindness and it's not dark at all. It's just very sweet and funny.
Nice. So let's go through the rest of the competition, at least, as we have things like Finding Frida. It's another installation, virtual reality piece. I'd love to hear a little bit about that.
That's a documentary piece from Norway that takes you to meet an incredible tapestry artist who has been forgotten by history. And it's actually the story is told by her great-great-granddaughter. And she was one of the sort of artists who changed the course of tapestry making and a kind of like arts and crafts movement
at the turn of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very, very delicate piece that blends live action documentary footage of her great-great-granddaughter taking her through the house she lived in into these incredibly intricate woven environments in a spatial environment, which is completely unique and so beautifully crafted in the same way the tapestries are. And it also has an incredible sound design. It's quite incredible. It's in Dolby, so it's quite a multi-sensory piece.
In a very, very different style, we also have an installation from Japan called Tomori. It's a project which is the end of studies of a young student who was coached by one of the main Japanese producers in Tokyo. And he is doing a piece which intrigued us very much because you're in this black box and you can only see the action of things that are actually the memories of a young man who's going through a sort of psychoanalysis, trying to understand his childhood when he felt that he was carrying the responsibility of revealing a family secret that he should have held. And you watch those memory sequences through slits in the wall. So you have to come to the wall, the physical walls of the box that you're in, and then those slits start forming, and you need to really come close and look through the slits to see what is going on. It's an amazing metaphor of accessing memories or altering memories. Some of the slits are like right at the bottom of the wall, so you have to go on all four and really crook your neck to get to see this. Some others are vertical, some others start moving around. It's a system that we have never seen. And we loved how it works as a metaphor of the inner complexity of your perception of the past. It's very, very Japanese in a very poetic way.
Yeah, another installation from Japan is Nox. Love to hear a little bit about that.
That's actually a standalone piece that's a very beautifully and powerful story about the artist's descent into depression and how she came out of it. But it's very metaphorical, it's very poetic, and it's beautifully designed. The environments are extraordinary, another very visceral piece. I think it got marked by mistake as an installation. Another installation that we're very excited about is Ulrika, by an artist named Hongbul Kai, who is at the Blend College with Michelle. He is a concert pianist, but he's a multidisciplinary artist who seems to have endless skills across different art forms. So Ulrika's installation is something we've never seen before. It has an incredible musical soundtrack and a narrative that's set on the water where there's projections into these giant, big, I think they're called zorbs. And so these giant inflatable blow-up bubbles. And you experience the story by wandering around these giant bubbles where the projection feels like a sort of spatial narrative that's going on. That's this underwater story that happens during the Second World War, where a wartime submarine escapes from a rumored enemy vessel, Ulrika. So again, something we've never seen before.
Maybe Spomini, Liz, you want to say?
The Spomini is by a Ukrainian artist who's based in the Netherlands, who's called Sofia Bukakova. And it's an installation that you sort of crawl through. There's these giant black rubber installation pipes. So it's as if you're sort of like, you know, in the service area of a building, you're kind of like moving through there. And at the end of each of these pipes, it's lit up and there's a little kind of speaker and you listen to fragments of memories and conversations and messages that the artist collected from her family and friends during the Ukrainian conflict. So another very visceral piece and another kind of art installation that's pretty novel in terms of the way these fragmented stories are brought together as you move through. You come in one end of the installation and sort of crawl around and look for these lit up ends of these tubes.
Hmm. And I had a chance to see the other immersive installation, Nothing to See Here at IFA Doc Lab, in terms of the Celine Dahman, a past winner there at Venice Immersive. And yeah, it's really interesting kind of liminal piece that feels like the type of projects where you could be put in a train station. And I don't know if you're going to be staging it just in the middle of somewhere or if it's going to have its own booth, but it's a place that really questions what's truths, what's reality. So yeah, having a really interesting out-of-body experience almost, really quite intriguing.
So we put her box for Nothing to See Here. We put it right in the main crossroad in a way where we think there's the most traffic in all of the islands. So it'll be right in the middle before you enter the exhibition proper. And it's going to be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah, so some of the other pieces in competition that we haven't talked about yet. So there's Anoikya, The Origin.
Oh, that's a sultuous story from India. So a big mythical story that is produced by the Oscar-winning composer A.R. Rahman, who's actually been making VR pieces for a while. He made a piece called Le Musk, which was shown in Cannes in the market, I think maybe almost 10
3 years ago.
Way before, I think it was about 2018 or something like that. And it's by a director called Alan Kishore. And it's a kind of mythical quest story that has sumptuous environs. It's the story of Anoikya, who's a courtesan who's trained in the ancient 64 arts. And she goes on a quest to seek a reclusive kind of guru in the mountains. So you go on this journey through these amazing landscapes with her. And this is the first episode of the project.
Hmm.
Then there are what we call standalones, which are, you know, single user experiences with just a headset. Among the most striking one is one from Palestine and Israel and Germany called Rajin. And it is the documentary in 360 video, very striking, showing the way Israel settlers in the West Bank are pushing Palestinian farmers out of their homes, out of their fields, burning their crops, killing their cattle, and destroying their homes. And it's an incredibly moving and striking way of making us see the reality of the violence, you know, that takes place in this confrontation. It's a very tough, very, very hard documentary.
And it's also, what's important about it is it's been produced and financed by this amazing human rights organization called B'Tselem, who are a joint Palestinian-Israeli organization who are charting civil rights abuses and ethnic cleansing in the West Bank. And it's a German-Palestinian co-production, but the directors are Palestinian and Israeli.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Definitely looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
Another piece called R2.
So R2 is special because it is the first immersive experience done by a very prestigious flat film African director by Abderrahmane Sissako, who has been awarded in Cannes, in Venice, in many festivals for his feature films. And he facilitated the burial of the father of Omar Sy. Omar Sy is an African-French actor who now lives in Los Angeles and is famous for his series Arsène Lupin. And his father died in France, but had expressed the wish to be buried in his ancestors' village in the heart of the desert in Mauritania. So he asked Abderrahmane to make a film about this. And that at that time, Abderrahmane was part of the jury in Venice 2 years ago, and he discovered the VR Island on that occasion. And then he told us, well, I'm going to make that film a VR experience. So it's a very interesting case of a prestigious filmmaker who is ready to take the risk and experiment with immersive. So the film is a black and white poem of the sons and daughters of the deceased father carrying the body of their father through the desert all the way to this village where he's going to be buried. And there's no dialogue, it's only images, and it's really a way of blending life and death in the desert. It's an experimental film, and it's very interesting to see how a filmmaker is bringing his own language, his own aesthetic into immersive. In that sense, it's a very interesting experience.
Mm. Nice. And another piece is called Eyes of Shame.
Yeah, from Lithuania. It's an animation 360 film, and it is the fantasized perception of a person who is in a clinic, severe psychological conditions, and where she is feeling abused, where she is in an extremely difficult relationship with her mother, and the distortions in her perception of her environment, of the people, are rendered through artifacts and through animation tricks that make the film incredibly close to us empathizing with what it must feel like when you're locked into a syndrome that keeps you, you know, prisoner of yourself and unable to escape a condition that prevents you completely from living normally or having normal connections with people around you. It's a remarkable achievement in rendering specific anxieties, emotional and psychological anxieties, through animation.
Hmm.
And I say Knox does that in a completely different way, that is, again, a similar subject matter that really places you in an environment that makes you sort of viscerally understand what it could feel like to be that in that darker space.
I think we need to say something also about Sunset Motel. It's a piece by Gilles Jobin. Gilles is a choreographer based in Geneva in Switzerland, and we have shown several of his works before because he has been a pioneer in live performance in the immersive space with dancers physically, you know, stationed in all kinds of different parts in the world, but coming together to perform the piece together virtually. But this piece is very, very different. It is a collaboration with an illustrator called Thomas Ott, and it's also a black and white piece, and it's also full animation. The choreography, the different bits of choreography are performed by the animated characters, There's no live performance for the first time in his work. And we can't spoil it, but there is a journey of you as the viewer in this motel in the middle of the desert, where you encounter different people, different couples, behaving in a weird way where they express themselves only through dance. But all of that progressively starts making sense. And you're free to roam around the space freely and focus on any people you want and move away, come back. And all these people have their own agenda in a way. They seem to want to achieve something very clearly and obsessively. And then I'm not going to spoil it, but then you start understanding what it is that they're all about. And it's an amazing surprise. It's a beautiful, beautiful metaphor. And I think I don't want to say more because there's an element of surprise that is essential to the charm of this piece. But I think Liz and I strongly recommend watching this piece.
Yeah, and the story is populated by the amazing illustrations and characters from Thomas Ott. And it's so beautifully choreographed in terms of, that's Sheila's expertise in terms of mocapping and the design. It's quite exceptional.
Yeah, I have a number of unpublished interviews with Shields I need to get out ahead of this festival. And check out his latest piece. Very curious to see how he's translated a lot of this choreography into like an embodiment in the motion capture and this animation. Sounds really provocative. So we have four more pieces in competition. I'd love to have a few words on. One is Honey Boys.
So Honey Boys is the first project we've shown by Thibaut de Jong from the Netherlands. He's from the Netherlands.
Yeah, in Belgium.
He's from Belgium.
Netherlands and Belgium are the two countries that are listed as co-producers. So
I think he's Dutch. So this is really a kind of allegorical poem. It's a kind of dreamscape that's about capitalism and overconsumption. And you follow a delivery boy through this grotesque environments that are sumptuous, decaying, and our world on steroids. And it's an incredible kind of meditation through our extractive world that is quite a ride and journey, and strongly recommend you see this one as well.
There's a piece called Haunts, or O-I, or Oi, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but in parentheses, it's called Haunts.
Yeah. It's a Welsh piece from Wales. This is the first time we're showing something from Wales. And it has a documentary that I mentioned about living in the countryside in Wales, in the middle of nowhere, basically, and reminiscing about being a teenager there and how trapped you feel being there and trying to find ways to escape. And that is set in the 90s. So there's a nostalgic look at how you are in a place where all you can think of is try and escape it. But at the same time, you reminisce about what made it so special. And because it's part of your youth, there are things you hang on to. So it's this tension between being from somewhere, needing to escape it, but at the same time, understanding the incredible attachment and the bond that you have with that place. So it is about that tension. It's a beautiful piece. And what else do we have?
Outre Noir.
Outre Noir. Outre Noir in French means beyond black, and it is an evocation of the work of a modern painter that did most of his work. Soulages, who became fascinated by the color, the light, and the texture of black. And he ended up doing all of his work only in black. So you are in his space and you understand in a poetic way. The voice, Isabelle Huppert, who is one of the most famous French actresses. And it's an evocation of the fascination for black and for light by this painter Soulages.
Yeah, and then the last piece in competition is called Yesterday Maybe.
Oh yeah, now this is a beautiful piece. It's about grief. And Yesterday Maybe comes from the first sentence of Camus' The Stranger. So it really delves into the kind of shock that happens when you learn about a very close loved one who has died. And it takes you in this kind of like intimate passage that questions all of the incomprehension that happens at that moment, and the passage you go through, and the question you go through, and the rituals you go through when that terrible moment happens. And it's a beautiful and very simple, simply designed piece by Mathieu van Eekhout.
Yeah, and in terms of homework for people to do ahead of the festival, or if you want to wait until the island, there's a number of pieces that are available, a part of the best of, including The Amusement, Crafting Crimes, Hotel Infinity, Little Nightmares VR, Altered Echoes, Spy Master. Most of these are games, except for, I'd say, Crafting Crimes is a little bit more of the immersive documentary from Targo Stories, which I had a chance to first see at South by Southwest. But they're doing some really incredible stuff of taking like a true crime drama podcast, but converting it into a VR format with spatial 180 video, but also more than anything, an interactive way of reconstructing the scene in a way that you're able to kind of project yourself into the story. That is just a really amazing fusion that I think is a format that is taking off for Targo Stories, but it's very worth checking out each of those episodes if you have a quest and want to do some homework ahead of the festival to see all those. But like most of the game-like experiences tend to be in the best of that are already also released because most of the released experiences are games. And the two pieces that are not a part of available online, I think we talked about some of the other best of as well, but VUPI and Of Woman Born immersive installations are also going to be on the island. I haven't seen those, so I'm looking forward to checking out those. But just curious if you have any other comments on the best of selection and things you want to point out.
Actually, very important to point out that Of Woman Born was a project that we both love that we saw at the Art Biennale. So it's a collateral event of the Art Biennale and it's off the island. So it opened in May and it's being exhibited in November and it's in a spectacular place that's not far from Zaterdam in Düsseldorf that's called the Magazin den Salem. So it was the old place where they stored salt. And this is a really incredible piece by Nalani Malini, who is an Indian artist, who was one of the first video artists from India. And she has taken thousands of her drawings and animated them. And there's nine different simultaneous projections that are happening in this incredible brick old space. And it's a very moving and powerful piece about war and about those who have escaped from any kind of like justice and the people who are oppressed in the world, which is mostly women. A lot of her work is very feminist based. But what I think really struck us as well was the handmade quality of the piece. And a lot of the projected pieces we see have a very synthetic feel to them. They seem to be very sort of like, the spectacular light experiences that often feel very software generated. And this piece is so visceral and so hand drawn and so powerful. And it's shown in this, it's projected against this old brick texture. And it's really worth a visit. And it's a beautiful part of Venice also to visit if you haven't
And
been
I think for
there.
us, it also represents symbolically our desire to send the message that Venice Immersive is not a closed bubble. We really embrace the fact that the very essence of what the Venice Biennale as a whole is doing is blending or supporting all kinds of art forms. And the hybrid nature of immersive, we think, needs to be represented also in our selection. And this is why, the same way that last year we showed Wayne McGregor's piece that was part of the Dance Biennale just before, this year we felt it was a nice symbol to include a piece from the Art Biennale in our best of program.
Nice. Yeah. And I know that for people who are scheduling, it'll require you to not overbook yourself or double book yourself to be able to go see it. Is this something you have to
Yeah.
book or is this something you just want to
No.
see?
No, so you
Okay.
just walk in.
Okay. It's not a time thing with the Wayne McGregor it was.
No,
So,
no,
no.
no,
It's
no.
open from, I think, 11 till 7 in the evening.
Okay. Well, it's a good excuse to go check it out for folks as well,
Yeah.
because it's always nice for me to, if I have some time to go check it out. So I'll try to make some time to go have a little immersive expedition and to go check it out, but not to book over any interviews for me or any other screenings. And just the last thing to mention, I guess, in terms of the program, you have the VR chat. There's a piece that was by Screaming Color that is not widely available. So if you do have a chance to see it, I think all the other VR Chat Worlds I had to check through, most of them are already published. You can go already check out. There's usually a VR Chat Worlds gallery you can go check out. But Screaming Colors piece is really incredible. I saw it at Rain Dance, and it's really moving, personal, musical piece that I highly recommend folks check out. And then the other thing to mention is at the Biennale College, you mentor 12 projects. One gets funding, some of them don't. And so it sounds like there's a piece from 2024, Library of Dreams, and then 2023 with the White Saboteur that, you know, if they don't get funding, take a little bit more time for them to show it, but they're going to be showing their projects as well. And
yeah.
I don't know if you have any other comments and to kind of as we start to wrap up about either VR Chat and then Biennale College pieces.
Just one last thing about VR Chat is that we have our own world in VR Chat called Venice Immersive 2026. And when you go in that world, which is a very simple world, you walk to the main square of our world. And on that main square, you will find the 28. Is it 28 worlds we have, Liz?
Yes.
I think the 28, you will find the 28 portals to all 28 worlds of our gallery selection. So by going to Venice Immersive 2026, you can directly access our full selection of worlds starting September 2nd.
Nice.
So it's an easy way to see the whole selection that we've done.
Nice. And I've also aggregated all the links, so I'm going to check them out ahead of time because it's easier for me to see it ahead of time. Part of my homework. Yeah. I'm going to be watching these other games that I haven't had a chance to see yet. So, but do you have any other comments on Library of Dreams or the White Saboteur? Those are the last two projects we haven't mentioned.
These are two projects that were developed in 23 and 24. The White Saboteur is an installation with no headset, where basically just by gazing at an iceberg, you have icebergs in front of you, by just gazing, you poke holes in you destroy the icebergs. And as you destroy them, quote, physically on the image, they reconstruct digitally in a parallel screen at the same time. So it's a metaphor of how the real world can be reproduced digitally when being destructed. And Library of Dreams is a reflection on how dreams from people, mostly in Europe, during the pre-war years between 1934 and then 1945, how people's accounts of their dreams sort of made sense and sort of created connections on the impact of those very troubling years.
Awesome. And I guess the final question I always like to ask is the ultimate potential of this medium. And I just, as a comment, I'd just like to say that I always love coming to Venice Immersive. It's like the beginning of the cycle of the year for all the amazing pieces. If you do have a chance and opportunity to go check it out and go to see all these amazing pieces, but also it's just an amazing opportunity to see how the artists are using all the different affordances of the medium and telling stories in completely new ways of blending all these affordances together. And so for me, it's always exciting to see what the future of the medium is and what's even possible. It's like these artists are pushing the edge way more than anything else that I see in the XR industry. It's really quite amazing to see the content and the stories and the moving experiences that people are creating. So I always love seeing the work and then talking to the creators. It's one of my highlights of the year. But just curious to hear any other final reflections as we wrap up here about the ultimate potential of immersive storytelling and immersive art and what it might be able to enable.
I think we are, Liz and I, we're probably fundamentally optimistic, but not based on wishes, not based on dreaming, you know, oh, it would be so nice if the future, you know, was more immersive. It's just based on facts. It's based on encounters. It's based on what we see happening, the commitment, the talent, the curiosity of artists and producers, and the way they are truly shaping the form more and more. So the opportunity of this 10 years anniversary feels really like a new birth, more than a coming of age.
And just to underline what you were saying, Kent, about this medium, I think what both Michelle and I feel and why we are so drawn to it and why we are so excited by it still is I think we live in a world where we're so disconnected and for most of the part so disembodied, and our lives become driven by more and more synthetic media and our lives become more synthetic. And for me, the kind of projects we're showing in Venice and the projects Michelle and I love we thought bring you into some form of embodiment and reconnection with your body and your mind. And that's what we hope and you enjoy and you experience and are moved by, that these experiences that we curated are giving you a new opportunity to embody spaces and stories and experiences and connect with other people.
Awesome. Any other final thoughts? Anything else we didn't talk about? Anything else left inside you'd like to say to the broader immersive community?
Well, do you have 2 more hours?
I do. No, I mean,
I think we covered the essential, but just like you said, Kent, the best way to understand, you know, and give flesh to everything we've been discussing here, unfortunately, means coming to Venice. The physical experience of it is what really makes you feel and understand the depth of the art form. So it's not for a lot of people, Venice is far away. It's not cheap. But I would say that if you do come, you will not regret it.
And just to say that if this podcast comes out before the 26th of August, because that is the cutoff date for getting a Venice Immersive Pass, and that is the most accessible way of visiting Venice Immersive, because it's only 40 euros, 60 euros, and 100 euros. Well, 100 euros was 10 for the full 11 days, 60 is for 5, and 40 is for 2. So if you do come to Venice, remember to get your pass before the 26th.
Yeah, I'm going to attempt to get this out either this weekend before I leave for a trip for folks to be able to have plenty of time to listen to it. And yeah, I'd say the thing about Venice is that it's on an island, that it's a destination that is a bit of a pain to get to. But what that means is that once you're there, everybody just kind of hangs out at that island and there's food there. And it's basically an amazing place to network with folks that are in the industry as well. It's like a spot where people are there seeing work. So, you know, do due diligence, figure out what kind of tickets you could see ahead of time. For folks in America, you have to wake up in the middle of the night to reserve the tickets. It's a little bit of a hassle to get the tickets sometimes, and like to get the slots that you want, it's a little bit of a chaotic, but that's different than say like a South by Southwest where you just show up and you basically, you have no guarantee as to what you may or may not see. So it's a little bit of like, you know what the schedule is going to be. And then in the time that you're not seeing work, you have plenty of time to kind of hang out, network. And so it's a really amazing opportunity for people to find new creators or to producers. And there's the production bridge and other stuff we didn't really talk too much about as well, but there's other things that are happening on the island that are also kind of like the XR industry of folks that are in this space are all there at the same time. And so it's a really incredible gathering of the folks together. So it's always amazing to hang out and to be there and to bear witness to all the work and to talk to all the people and to see what's happening in the industry. So yeah, it's an exciting time, liminal time, things are ending, new things are beginning, but it really feels like some strong roots are being planted. And I get a sense when I go to Venice, I get a peek into the future for where this is all going. So yeah, amazing job. And it's always great to see the work and to develop my own thinking around what's happening in the industry by seeing these projects and, yeah, just having a chance to talk to the artists and see what they're thinking and what kind of stories they're telling. So thanks again for Liz and Michelle for joining me on the podcast to give a little bit of a sneak peek for what's coming for Venice Immersive 2026.
Thanks, Kent. Thank you so much.
So thanks so much for listening to the Voices of VR podcast. And if you enjoy the podcast, then please do spread the word, tell your friends, and consider becoming a member of the Patreon. This is a listener-supported podcast, and so I do rely upon donations from people like yourself in order to continue to bring this coverage. You can join today at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.